So that's all getting them in the door, right? Once they're in the door, how do you pick the right one? And I have to kind of go back to, I mean, we've implemented paneling, and I know, and there's a lot of different opinions out there, but I don't know that there's a lot of research validated things around selection. And for me, and this is going to sound geeky, but I think it's really relevant for our audience. The employment interview validity by Schmid and Zimmerman back in like 2004 is the only study I'm aware of. And I'm not a big study guy, but it basically came down to this. Most executives do average or poorly at selecting management above. And the best way to do it properly is a panel. You can actually go out, you can search online, you can look at the research, but it really comes down to doing separate interviews is broadly a waste of time. A properly done panel with structured scorecards and maybe a proper debrief at the end is actually the way that if you want to increase your hit rate, your batting average, I'm going to hire 10 people this year and I don't want to lose five. I want to keep 8 or 9 or 10. The right way to do it is with a panel. And that's actually backed up.
Thank you for listening to Ivy Podcast, where we feature weekly leadership conversations with thought leaders and industry experts. Now, here is your host, John Karsibayev.
I'm Stephen McCarty. I'm the Chief People Officer for Apex Service Partners. We are an organization that acquires, and in the future I'll say partners with, but acquires companies in the trades, in the plumbing, electrical, and HVAC, a often overlooked part of American industry.
That's exciting. Stephen, thanks so much for finding time to join us on the Ivy Podcast today. Want to dig a little bit deeper into kind of the strategies for the acquisitions and how you guys select the companies and so forth. But before we get into that, tell us a little bit more about yourself, about your background, where you come from, career path, and where you headed next.
Sure, sure. So I had a few jobs and then did most of my career with a big rent-a-car company, Enterprise, which started really small at the time. We were kind of pulling trailers on dirt lots and knocking on doors for business and learned to kind of run and grow a business. And then as the company grew over time, got into human resources and started an HR department, went to the corporate office and helped other people start HR departments, wrote a lot of the policies and trainings and procedures that the organization has today. And most recently, before this current role, was their head of talent development for the company. And at that point, it was, you know, multi-businesses, multi-brands, multi-country. And most recently was consulting before starting with Apex. So got back to my roots working with small and mid-sized companies, and that's how I got connected into Apex Service Partners. It's fun helping small businesses be better versions of themselves again.
Well, that's exciting. And congrats on all the successes through the career. Real quick, right now you are Chief People Officer. You know, there's some misconceptions about the role. Tell us a little bit more about, you know, just the role in general. What falls under your purview? What are some of the things maybe that people don't know about this particular role? What are the major highlights?
You know, I kind of almost wonder if the Chief People Officer title is kind of titled wrong. I kind of think of my Chief Executive Officer as the Chief People Officer, and right. Hopefully I'm doing a good job for the people underneath him. But, you know, people is kind of the evolution of, you know, personnel/HR. And, you know, I mean, you think about HR human resources. Oh, my humans are resources like other assets in the business. It's, you know, fairly blandly put. You know, the people function is meant to be more talent focused, more culturally focused. And that's what I'm responsible for. You know, on one side, you have classic HR operations. Our people deserve fantastic benefits, fantastic internal employee services, the same way we would have external customer service. But at the same time, the real differentiator is not trucks or trades or even finance or capital, it's people, right? So having the title and the department aligned towards where the true differentiator is people. So really all things employee focused is something that we hopefully support and lead.
Well, that makes sense. And, you know, that's exciting. And I can relate to, you know, what you're talking about, you know, I talked to a lot of executives, and one of the kind of prevalent themes is, you know, digital transformation, a lot of transformation initiatives. But what it boils down to at the end of the day, it starts with people transformation, that you cannot, you know, be successful transforming your systems, your technology, if, you know, the people are not bought in. So I think that makes sense from a standpoint of what you're talking about in terms of the overall role as a chief people officer. As, you know, as I interview a lot of, you know, entrepreneurs and also executives as well. And one of the things that were really, you know, excite me is to talk about different ideas or trends that from your perspective will be prevalent these days. What are you most passionate about, whether that's in your industry specific or it's something in general that you currently observe or looking to invest in? Share with us any ideas that really excite you that you think will be the next big thing.
Yeah, sure. So I almost, if I'm allowed to go a bit backwards, Johnny, I almost kind of want to comment on what you were commenting on and the title and the function. Yeah. I just think of it. Just go back 100 years. Your cars or no cars, computers or no computers, internet or no internet. What was the common thread between companies that did well and didn't do well? Because the industry's changed. Industries rose and died. You know, in our lifetimes, it's been happening. You know, the differentiation of people and people leadership has been significant. I think that's the evolution of our function. So it just came to mind as you were speaking before, and then, you know, sorry to go backwards on you, but to your current question, you know, about the trends in the industry. Oh man, I think I don't want to be so bold as to think that we can, you know, do this perfectly, but we really do want to bring respects back to our trades. Like if you think 20 or 30 years ago to take a longer time horizon, you know, white collar work and blue collar work were more equally respected. Like, you know, many of us had fathers, like my grandfather drove a milk truck. I mean, and these were jobs where, you know, hard working men and women literally built America. And then you see high schools kind of starting to take out some of the trades training or the vo-tech or stuff like that. If you fast forward to today, there's almost, people almost overlook, you know, from a consumer perspective and from a business perspective, these wonderful, beautiful, skilled trades that really are the foundation of our country. And from a business point of view, wow, what multi-billion dollar nationwide industry has tens of thousands of small companies in it, mm-hmm. with maybe only a handful of nationwide players or companies becoming nationwide like us? It's an amazing business opportunity where somebody's skills like yours or mine can hopefully make the industry maybe a bit better because they haven't had the benefit of larger scale companies or more developed professions like ours. Mm-hmm. So I think the trend of the industry is now starting to say, wow, maybe we have overlooked this. I think, you know, just some PE firms have noticed it. I think, you know, the media is starting to notice it. I think that you're starting to see more press out there about, okay, how many white collar, you know, college graduates, if you will, are in jobs that don't require quote unquote college degrees? According to my research, it's about 17 million. You see research out there about the cost of a degree and what's the return of that. And then you see bias, frankly, stereotyping in a society that shouldn't stereotype anybody. We stereotype work in addition to people. And I candidly think that's wrong. You know, the blue collar trade should be not even more respected, but they should be acknowledged as the fantastic careers that they are. And I think those trends, you know, thinking about small business, you know, thinking about what really built America, thinking about what will be here 20 years from now, our skilled trades will be. I don't know that certain jobs will be. I think there's a lot there to think of with our industry that both respects the past and evolves towards the future.
Oh, absolutely. And that makes sense, you know, from a standpoint of, you know, just overall trend, where we're going from education standpoint, from, you know, professional setting. It's, you know, I can definitely relate, especially with us coming out of, quote unquote, from the pandemic. I think, you know, it's, you know, definitely shines a lot more light on that particular aspect of that. So that's pretty cool. So for you, you know, as a chief people officer and also being an exec in this space for quite some time, I'm pretty sure that, you know, innovation is at the forefront, is one of the key strategies just overall as, you know, organizational success. And I spent a lot of time, you know, talking about this particular topic on a lot of the podcasts, you know, that we host. And one of the kind of as far as strategies or initiatives that really help you as an executive to build and foster that culture of innovation, I know it's an extremely loaded question, but from a standpoint of something that stands out, something that you have seen work, you know, day to day, as far as building that type of culture within the organization, share with us any insights from that standpoint.
You know, I think some of it's new and fun. I think some of it's just classic, right? You know, I think getting into the classic space, you know, I've seen a number of projects, even within our own organizations and the partners and companies that we buy and support. You know, just a couple of days ago, we were working on some different things with some compensation plans. I said, well, has anybody, or what did our, people doing these jobs say when we asked them? It's a good point. We should go check. Right. So sometimes as managers, as leaders, we have these different ideas and this innovation and this or that, or we read the periodicals, we listen to your, we listen to your podcast, and we come up with these things. And for as simple as it is, we forget to get 5 or 10 of our best folks that are actually doing the front line, whatever job it is, get them in a room, get a pizza, and just whiteboard. What do you like? What don't you like? What would you change? Mm-hmm. And even if they hit all the things that you would have hit anyway, it's their idea now, not yours. And I guarantee it, just about every conversation, you know, our men and women will identify things that we have missed in leadership. Ask is my first thing. I think the second one is organizational design. I mean, our CEO, myself, our CFO, we want to be very intentional in setting this company up in a very decentralized way. I mean, we partner with fantastic companies. In some cases, they've been around for decades. They know far more than we ever will about many, many things. And for us to be able to kind of, I don't know, be like the NFL, you know, have a set of rules, have a set of parameters, every so often maybe wear the black and white stripes and, you know, kind of call something if it kind of went out of foul or whatever. But for the most part, you know, within certain guidelines, let our partners play the fantastic game and come up with their ideas and their innovations locally. And then if we're smart and if we're listening and asking, we can go ahead and identify those quicker and share them more quickly. It's kind of like a state's rights versus federal rights. Do you want everything coming out of one government, or is it kind of interesting to see how 50 different states approach their economies? Yeah. I would argue for the latter.
Absolutely.
I think right. The asking and then the organizational design and the last thing would just be, there are, especially in the people HR space, a lot of very interesting things like that's happened in the consumer space, predictably with data. And we need to get much better in our profession of partnering with our CIOs and partnering with our CFOs and being fact-based and metric-driven. We generally don't do that well with people in HR, and we need to do that better.
Right, absolutely. It's, you know, definitely being that, not almost a service provider, but more of a strategic partner, especially when it comes to, you know, business decisions or people decisions or whatever the particular initiative that's in place. I think HR, talent acquisition, becomes, you know, a critical aspect of that. So that's exciting to hear about what you're talking about. And for you guys, seems, you know, correct me if I'm wrong, the growth strategy primarily is through acquisition, right? You guys acquire a lot of the different companies. Tell us a little bit about that process. What does that look like? How do you guys identify the prospect, as you know, to the extent that you can? And more importantly, what I'm curious about is, when you go through that acquisition and making that particular company part of the overarching organization, as far as preserving that culture, preserving that, you know, the overall mentality, what are the strategies that really help you there?
So to the first question, it's great questions, by the way. So to the first question, how do I identify them? I mean, I think most companies do that consistently well. I mean, you have some men and women and you ask them to find people in your space, and you have certain parameters, and we've identified those parameters of folks that, you know, we want to work with / partner with / buy. I think what's interesting now is, you know, just recently, you know, we have several businesses that we support and partner with in Texas. Based on those, you know, based on their experiences with us, they are actively referring other people to us. So, you know, HR folks are talking about, you know, employee referrals, or, you know, marketers will talk about consumer referrals. We see it on the business side too. You know, we see people saying they've respected my brand, they've respected my leadership, they respect what I've done well, but then they have these additional things that I didn't have. And that word gets out, man. And it gets out within your industry niche. And that's happening to us. So we're really excited about these kind of referrals that come in, because hopefully it's a sign of respect for the way we've treated the previous partners that we've worked with. What was the second part of your question?
Second part was around, you know, as you guys go through with the acquisition and, you know, make that company part of the, you know, overall organization, as far as embedding that, the two different companies, and, you know, also preserving the core values, the core culture, what are the different strategies that really help you succeed in that particular situation?
I think my CEO screened me with a question very similar to that when I got hired. This is back to org design. This is back to leadership. This is back to leadership not being about itself, right? So, I mean, how do we preserve the local cultures? First of all, that's very important for us with the skilled trades. These brands have, in many cases, been around for years and decades.
Right.
So how do you add value without destroying what they've done well? And that is, to a large degree, our respect for decentralization. We want to build local leaders to be better versions of themselves. And we've seen some things from larger company perspectives or from some other industries that maybe don't exist in most of these companies. So let's layer in the things that we've seen that could be helpful and not getting in the way of the things that they do well. And there's a lot of intentionality, man, that comes around with that. We literally call our business partners that are running large chunks, like, you know, a state or a certain section, multiple brands, if you will. They are called regional CEOs, very intentionally. It's not title inflation, because they are the chief executive officer of their local operation. And we need to support, enhance, but never replace that role.
Right, absolutely. And, you know, that's pretty interesting, because, as you know, I'm pretty sure you guys acquire companies of various size, whether that's, you know, in the mom and pop shop or, you know, much larger organization. And I'm pretty sure part of the evaluation strategy is also how to really preserve that, you know, the culture that they have, but also at the same time, make it part of, you know, the Apex ecosystem. So that's, I think that's pretty interesting how you guys go through that process. So you've been in HR, talent acquisition space, for quite some time, obviously thought leader in this. Share with us any insights or anything practical, or maybe even, you know, things to avoid when it comes to interviewing, when candidates interview with you. Tell, you know, give us a glimpse into interview with Steve. What does that look like? What do you ask? Do you get creative with it? And, you know, what do you look for in some of the responses?
But it's a great question, because, you know, many of us have done this for years. I don't know that many people do it well. As a matter of fact, I think most people do it somewhere between below average and poorly.
I would agree. Yeah.
So starting with a candidate point of view, and part of this is Steve pet peeve, and part of this, I think, is really candidate perspective. You know, candidates, I call it the I statement. Like, look at you know, when folks are applying with you guys, or if they're applying with us or what have you, especially at you know, management and above roles, if there's a cover letter, which there's not always anymore, but if there's a cover letter, I love reading the cover letter and just counting the number of I's. I would like to work for your company because I have the skills that I can wind up having career growth, and I would like this and I would like that. And if I put my marketing cap on and take off my people cap, it's wrong. It's the wrong approach. You know, companies don't have jobs that are open for your needs. Once you do a great job, I'll walk off the face of the planet for you career-wise. But ultimately, my job is open because I have a business need. I mean, the I statement should be replaced with the you statement, right? And this goes through the cover letter, but it also goes through the interview. I understand that one of your biggest challenges right now is selecting leadership, you know, because you are acquiring companies at a very fast rate, and then you call them partners, and that your leadership development program is formative right now. But I understand that you have some people like you with a lot of background in this space, and that's really interesting to me. That is an entirely different conversation than saying, I want to grow my career. So flip the I statement as a candidate. Flip it 180 degrees. It's not about what your future needs are. The company will care if you've selected the right company, but they'll care after you meet their needs. And I'm sorry to put it in such business terms, but it's true.
Right.
The other thing I would go from a candidate perspective, man, is just, you know what? Stop applying for so many jobs. Apply for fewer jobs and just apply for them well. Mm-hmm. Like, no ProSource, no Apex, know the company that you're applying for in lots of detail, and you will differentiate on that alone. You'll have far more hits, right, and waste far less time by just being more thoughtful and targeted. Less is more, man. Less is more.
I love that. I love those recommendations. And, you know, recently I had, you know, one success story where we had interviewed, where I had hosted one HR executive from a local healthcare company. And, you know, she calls me a couple of days ago and she says, hey, you know, actually just wanted to share this story with you that one of the candidates who was, you know, interviewing with us at their company for, you know, an executive role, apparently had listened to the episode that we did with her and where she talked a lot about leadership style, the type of culture they have within the organization. And actually that candidate took the time to really kind of research, investigate, and do a lot of the homework from that standpoint. And, it boils down to also some of the reasons why a lot of the executives participate in forums like this, like the podcasts, and, you know, being open about their leadership style and the type of culture they have within the organization. Because I think to me, that's the most effective way to relay that versus, you know, just having somebody read an about us section of, you know, of the company on the website. So I thought that was pretty cool. And kind of in the sense what you're also talking about, providing the candidate with an opportunity to interview you as well, to make that a conversation, to make that, you know, a dialogue versus just, hey, it's only me interviewing you as a candidate. I think there's a lot of misconceptions from that standpoint. So I love what you were talking about.
100%, man. Yep, absolutely.
In terms of, if we look at the current, you know, the current times and, you know, what's coming ahead and a lot of, you know, good questions that we get from our audience, some are early stage career professionals coming out of schools, second year MBAs and so forth, boils down to what are some of the in-demand skill sets, you know, these days that are in demand, that will be in demand. Share with us any insights from your perspective. What would that be? What would you recommend kind of, you know, investing as far as, you know, learning or developing further skills? Curious to get your take on that.
Well, I mean, broadly anything technical, right? I mean, you could put a whole lot into that, but our skilled trades, absolutely. I mean, you just look macroeconomically, not enough supply, more than enough demand. I mean, you see that, you know, with, you know, a lot of the engineering, a lot of the, you know, the computer IT type of stuff that you guys, I'm sure, know better than anybody. So I think from a technical skill point of view, you don't have to spend very long searching on Google to know which professions truly have that supply demand delta that is to a candidate's advantage. But beyond that, look, if you get an interview, you got the interview because you looked like you had the technical, all right? So let's just assume the technical, and technical could be the background of MBA, the experience, whatever it is. Anytime that you get an interview, somebody thought that you had those basic core skills. Mm-hmm. Now the argument is going, the decision is going to be made on the intangibles, right? I'm talking to five folks. They all looked decent with their CV. So now what am I differentiating on? Initiative, the I versus you statements, the understanding, you know, the work ethic. You still are going to get back to those same things that were relevant 100 years ago, and they're going to be relevant 100 years from now. Mm-hmm. It's going to be passion, growth mindsets, you know, initiative, work ethic, those types of things, the ability to work cross-departmentally and cross-profession, especially increasingly nowadays. And I want to go back to growth mindset, because a lot of professions are going to outgrow folks that don't continue to grow within those professions. Mm-hmm. And having continuous learning, you know, whether that be ongoing certifications, going back to school, whatever it is, just examples of continuous learning are critical, because otherwise the company's going to outgrow you and outgrow you fast.
Right. Right. Absolutely. No, I love that. And goes hand in hand with, you know, technical skills. Yes, they're important. They're in demand, but at the same time, you know, skills evolve. And if you don't match that up also with some of the, you know, matching soft skills, be, you know, some of the things that you had mentioned, the ability to, you know, from emotional intelligence perspective, ability to collaborate, I think those are the skills that require continuous development. And that's super important for, you know, the period actually that we're entering these days with being a remote workforce, you know, everything is being, you know, done virtually. I think that even elevates that particular need for that. So that's great. Yep. As a, you know, chief people officer, you know, what are the strategies that help you attract the top talent to your organization, or maybe what's not working? What are the things to avoid? Curious to get your take on something that, you know, has consistently produced great results for you.
I mean, how many times, I mean, if I go back in the future and if I go forward in the future, go back in the past and forward in the future, how many times have you heard war for talent, war for this, war for that? You know, I mean, you know, the battle rages, right? So what are the key ingredients to folks who have done better than average? You know, the first, one of the reasons I joined Apex was frankly, you know, my CEO and CFO, you know, Will and AJ. You know, our CFO, our chief financial officer said just recently on an all hands call that we had, hiring is the most important thing we do. Who? Have you ever heard another CFO say that?
Love that.
And it's not to say that other things aren't critically important, but he knows that if we get that next controller, right, that next VP of finance, that next HR director, whatever, everything else underneath that person gets right. So I guess, you know, the first strategy is just making sure that non-talent acquisition, non-HR, non-people officers are actually engaged with that priority. And I know my boss feels that way, and I know our CFO feels that way. And that makes the lift that we do in talent and people that much easier. That being ingredient one, I think ingredient two is to don't think like HR people. Think like the marketing folks. Like our new marketing leader, Akrit, comes from a consumer marketing background at a major company locally, and he's just fantastic. And what he does with consumers, we should do with candidates. Know your audience. You know, for us, where's the military? Where's the MBAs? Which MBAs have we hired in the past? You know, what programs have the military men and women come in the past? How do I customize my message? How do I become a niche marketer in recruiting? And there's a lot of intentionality around defining audience, defining persona, defining the communications, and then building a media plan so that I do less work, but in pools that have greater production. Mm-hmm. And that is a great partnership, I think, between people and marketing. And then I think the last ingredient for us as companies is, you know, a lot of times, frankly, HR, recruiters, talent acquisition, we become little fiefdoms. Mm-hmm. And I don't like it. You know, like, who's our competitor inside the company? Nobody. Mm-hmm. And that could be said for all staff departments, really. And I'll kind of put that thought aside and just come back to the people function and specifically the talent acquisition function. I think very strongly that when we have multiple recruiting professionals, that we should be able to have them developed kind of like the decentralized org chart we talked about before with our regional mm-hmm. CEOs in such a way so that they have an incredible amount of autonomy and leadership and ownership for the local operations. But it also allows you to rank everything. It also allows you to see, you know, who's better at certain things. It allows for that best practice sharing and frankly, for a lot more accountability. You got to be very careful about having a fiefdom internally. So I think the org design, the marketing partnership, you know, I think those are some of the key things, you know, and the senior leadership engagement. If you don't have that, the rest of it's harder.
Right. Absolutely. No, I love those examples from a sense that it should not be only a siloed function within the organization. As you know, we tend to think of just HR or talent acquisition being responsible for that to attract the top talent. I think it's the mindset, you know, not only at the executive level, at every level within the organization, to be kind of that on that constant hunt for A players, for winners, for, you know, the people that, you know, will elevate you, will make you better. I think it sounds very simple, but oftentimes overlooked strategy when it comes to surrounding yourself with top talent or attracting the top talent to your organization.
And talking about that top talent, if I could just pile on, you know, so that's all getting them in the door, right? Once they're in the door, how do you pick the right one? And I have to kind of go back to, I mean, we've implemented paneling, and I know, and there's a lot of different opinions out there, but I don't know that there's a lot of research validated things around selection. Mm-hmm. And for me, and this is going to sound geeky, but I think it's really relevant for our audience. The employment interview validity by Schmid and Zimmerman back in like 2004 is the only study I'm aware of. And I'm not a big study guy, but it basically came down to this. Most executives do average or poorly at selecting management above. And the best way to do it properly is a panel. You can actually go out, you can search online, you can look at the research, but it really comes down to doing separate interviews is broadly a waste of time. A properly done panel with structured scorecards and maybe a proper debrief at the end is actually the way that if you want to increase your hit rate, your batting average, I'm going to hire 10 people this year and I don't want to lose 5. I want to keep 8 or 9 or 10. The right way to do it is with a panel. And that's actually backed up. So I push everybody towards the panels when possible, panels done correctly.
Absolutely. And, you know, there's I may butcher it, but there's this famous statistic quote that goes within the lines of, you know, we spend 3% of our time recruiting, interviewing, and hiring. And then the other 97% we spent actually fixing our hiring mistakes. So kind of that goes hand in hand with what you're talking about in terms of really hiring is one thing, but also really make sure that whole retention aspect and the internal growth really becomes the highlight, you know, the focus center.
Yeah, we'll never get it right, but our goal is to get it wrong a lot less often.
right, absolutely. Simple as that. That's great. Steve, in terms of your personal development, your personal learning, what are your sources of information? What are your sources for learning? What do you read? What do you follow? Whether that's a blog that you subscribe to or, you know, Twitter handle, whatever the case may be, share that with us.
You know, I think we have invested in, you know, some kind of executive coaching for our higher level folks, you know, within the organization. So we get some good stuff out of there. Currently I'm reading The Character's Edge, which talks about the character component of leadership. And, you know, we tend to look at it from a competency point of view. Can I do strategic? You know, what's my financial acumen, whatever it is. And I think we forget about the internal character. It's written by the guy who ran West Point for a little while. So it's a very interesting read that kind of takes the thought in a different direction. I frankly enjoy talking with non-HR folks, like we're working on our analytics across section team with our analytics partners to just frankly learn more about spaces I don't know about. And, you know, there's a couple of thoughts there.
That's awesome. Is there a particular book that you always recommend to others?
For HR people, I think there's two. Mm-hmm. A CIO, getting back to the whole, you learn more from people outside your profession. A CIO several years ago referred me to How to Measure Anything by Douglas Hubbard. And frankly, HR people will often say, you can't measure this, you can't measure that, or this isn't relevant, or that's not relevant. Well, guess what? The book refutes all that and actually gives you a lot of tools. And then the other one I love, and I've talked about this for a number of years, The More Beautiful Question. You don't even have to read the whole book. I hope the author doesn't hear me saying that. But you can kind of get the gist of it from the first few chapters. And it really is all about framing the question correctly. Drives you to a better solution. You know, how to ask better questions for us is so key. As candidates or in leadership or all points in between, focus more on the questions, not the answers. So those are two that I find that have worked well across our profession and all professions.
I love it. Thanks for those recommendations. And we'll make those notes available in, you know, in the comment section of our episode. Steve, Ken, thank you enough for your time today. Lots of great insights, you know, very short but very effective conversation. Personally learned quite a bit. Definitely going to stay in touch with you. Perhaps we can do another episode, you know, in the near future and see how much I've changed, how much it transpired. So really appreciate it.
Appreciate you bringing your thought leadership to the call too, and for the great questions. And I enjoyed it. Thank you very much.
Thank you for listening to the Ivy Podcast. Be sure to subscribe to our RSS feed on ivypodcast.com and all major podcasting platforms like Spotify and iTunes. As always, if you enjoyed this podcast, please give us a rating on iTunes.